CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. The Sky.
We're back with CJ on Fired Up with CJ. Our guest today is Richard Bandler, and we're talking about neuro-linguistic programming, fears, and how to overcome them. And now back to CJ.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. So we are fortunate to have Richard Bandler here today, and he is going to walk us through an exercise. And so we're going to be walking through an exercise where he is going to be taking a bad habit or something that you want to get rid of.
Let's take something simple. Let's just take a bad memory.
A bad memory.
A memory that you think about way too much, and it makes you feel bad.
Okay. All right. So we're going to take a bad memory, and you're going to demonstrate some of the things that we're talking about the previous segment of how to take that bad memory and replace it with a good memory. What are we going to replace it with?
No. Let me do this. This is my job.
Okay. You do your job. I'm just going to sit
here. Guessing is not a part of it. That's how people get into trouble. They start guessing things.
Okay.
See, if you have a bad memory, the first thing I can, if it really bothers you, I can pretty much guarantee that it's big. It's either life size or larger than life. Because if, in order for it to bother you, it has to have a big screen. And so if you look at it and it makes you feel bad, that's pretty much, you know, it's at least almost life size. And if you actually think about it and it's making you feel bad, your feelings are actually going to spin forward, backwards, clockwise, or counterclockwise, because those are the only choices. And if you're looking at it and you notice you take your hand and literally spin it in a circle forward and a circle so it tumbles backwards and then go clockwise and counterclockwise, you can kind of figure out which way it's going. This is called your entenic nervous system. And it's the connection between all of your hollow and solid organs. And it's what makes us feel bad. That's how we retain bad feelings, is that we can do them over again. Now, if you look at this big picture and suddenly you snap it down to a circle about 2 inches in size and see the picture, then turn it black, see the picture, turn it white, see the picture, turn it black, and make it so it flickers, go that fast in your mind. When you go back and try and think about it again, it will be difficult. You have to do it really quick because the brain doesn't learn slowly. If I handed you a picture on a card and I gave it to you once a week, you'd have no idea what it did. But if I flick through it like a deck of cards, you'd see the stick figure get up and dance and throw a basketball through the hoop. It's because the brain has to pattern by speed. So when you take this big memory and you go, turn it to a little circle and go and go along like that, what happens is it begins to train your neurology not to stop at the bad feeling, but when the bad feelings start, it trains you first to reduce the intensity and then to turn it and saturate it white and saturate it black. Because, you see, in the old days, we had TVs that had a knob on it called the brightness knob. And if you turned it, you could turn the whole screen absolutely white or the whole screen absolutely black. And when we think about memories, we always start at the beginning and we run through a portion of it while we're feeling bad. That's why we do it.
Right.
So if you actually freeze frame it, it's not going to produce the feelings. When you shrink it and start to blink it, then what happens is it teaches your neurology to have a next step. Don't just stay in this loop of feeling bad about something. You go in your mind and you do something, you do it quick enough, and the bad feeling won't come up. Did you try it?
I did. I took my bad memory, I shrunk it down, and then spun it around. And
blink it black and white really fast. And then if you take a deep breath, open your eyes, and then try to think about it again.
I still have it, so maybe I didn't do a good job.
Well, you still have it? Is it the same size?
No, it's smaller.
It's smaller, so it doesn't make you feel so bad.
Right. So do you just keep
shrink it down faster and blink it faster, then what will happen is you do that 2 or 3 times, pretty soon it becomes difficult. Then there's one other trick. Then what you do is you go to the end of the memory, and you start running it in reverse. So everybody walks backwards, talks backwards, and you throw in a little circus music. Look like a Charlie Chaplin thing. People will talk to you.
Okay,
when
that works.
When you run memories backwards, it flattens out the strength that's in the neurological circuit that maintains it. Because since you always run it forwards, the charge from one cell to the next builds up and expects to go that way. When you run a memory backwards, it flattens it out, so it won't run by itself so well.
Right.
Did you try that?
Yes, I did. And you know what? That was the thing that did it. When I did that, I know because I actually get a little energetic shock in my body. I go boop, like it's like a, I don't know, shock deep, but I don't know how to describe it, but I get a little bit of a shock when things shift. So I felt that when I did that.
Well, the giveaway is that you're, if you do this well enough, your feelings will spin in the opposite direction. You can actually force them to if you want to. If you notice they're tumbling forward or feeling spinning backwards, which way were your feelings going?
Mine were going forward. They're going
okay,
kind of
so make them go a little faster. It'll get a little worse. You slow it down and start to spin it in the opposite direction. Then you spin it faster and faster in the opposite direction, and it'll disappear.
Yeah.
Now, I've done this with people who have come back from wars. See, most of these vets that come back, when they're in such a state of adrenaline for so long, what happens is when they come back, their life doesn't feel real. And, you know, it doesn't have the intensity that they remember it having when they left, because probably, you know, the most intense thing they did was drive 70 miles an hour in a car or maybe kiss a girl for the first time. And you go to these places where every moment you have to be totally alert. You're firing off the fight-flight reaction over and over again, and you live in a state where there's so much adrenaline that when you come back, nothing seems quite real.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can diminish the intensity of these things and shrink these memories down and whiten them out and run them in reverse, and then take the things that you remember and make them bigger and brighter, it helps these people to get over the post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working with this all the way back to the Vietnam War, in fact, to the Korean War.
Has there ever been anyone that you just can't work with or like, just never work?
Yeah, some of my relatives are annoying. I can't do anything about them.
What do you think is it called?
Some people are just a pain in the ass, and I want nothing to do with them, and there are people who can't follow instructions. I had a schizophrenic once that just wouldn't do anything I asked him to, and I finally looked at his family and said, he's too much trouble. You know, I mean, I have done things where they're incarcerated, where I've gotten their attention by doing things. I used to do that a lot when I was younger. You know, somebody thought they were Jesus Christ, I'd take them out and crucify them. I'd always do it on Good Friday because I was fond of being able to look at them and go, you know, what day it is, and they go, no, and I go, it's Good Friday. Good for me, but not so good for you.
All right, so there have been, but it's usually because their mind isn't open to it. Is it because they're
it's even more than that. It's just that some people they want nothing to do with you. I can't force anybody to do anything. I'm not in that business. I'm in the business. Most of the people that come to me, they come to me as a last resort. I would say in the past four decades, 95% of the people I've worked with have said in the first five or six sentences that I'm their last hope. They've been through every kind of therapy. They've been through everything. You know, they went, you know, even kids with learning disabilities, their parents have said, we've tried everything. We've tried this, we've tried this, we've tried that. So when people come to me, pretty much they've given up hope. So they'll pretty much try anything I ask them to, which is all I really need. I need to get them into a different state of consciousness, which is why I use a lot of hypnosis.
Right.
Because a lot of our inhibitions that stop us from learning are a result of just the way our habit of thinking. You know, I've had a lot of, in the past probably 15, 20 years, people who are fairly wealthy that have paid me because they've gone to rehab 5, 6, 7 times and gotten nowhere. You know, I had a musician who, you know, was getting kicked out of a band that it was hard to believe you would get kicked out of. You know, because he took so much drugs, he couldn't function. And, you know, when he came in, I even said to him, I said, do you have any? And he said, no, and looked over at his coat. So I grabbed this baggie, and when I pulled the baggie out of his pocket, good God, it was like a pound of flour. It was unbelievable that he even carried that around with him. And
right.
When I laid it out on the table, I said, do you want to take this? And he went, absolutely. And I said, so let's do the catalog. So far, you've lost your family. You're about to lose your income. You've wasted hundreds of thousands of dollars. You've made yourself sick. You've had a heart attack, and you want to do it again. And he went, absolutely, because I know it will make me feel good. And when I said, how do you know? He said, oh, I just know. And whenever you hear that word just, it's the barrier between conscious and unconscious thought. The word just means only in logic, and it means I'm only thinking about this. I'm not thinking about other stuff. So when I got him, I asked him, I said, when you think about it, is it a slide or a movie? And he goes, oh, it's just a still picture. I see the straw on the Coke, and I know how it's going to make me feel. And I said to him, I said, well, let's turn it into a little longer movie. So I had him run a whole feature-length film where when he looked down, he saw himself getting high over and over and over again, getting kicked out of the van, running out of money, getting sued for everything he has, ending up in an alley with somebody pissing on him. And I said, do you want it now? And he looked at me and goes, not so much. And I said, well, see, you're making a life decision based on a little tiny picture.
Right.
And sometimes people have great big long movies when they really only need a few slides. And
right.
Sometimes people, you know, have a still picture when they need a long thing that goes into the future that shows them what's going to happen. This is why we have brains, is to think. And most of NLP really boils down to teaching people to think appropriately given the things that they're doing. When I get rid of a bad memory, I always look at people and I go, do you know what you just did? I said, do you know what this is called? And they look at me and they go, neuro-linguistic programming? I go, no, it's called thinking. What you were doing before was just remembering. That's why you could feel bad exactly the same way over and over again. All I asked you to do was to think differently, so therefore you could feel differently, so therefore you could do different things.
Love it. All right, we're going to be right back. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be right back with Richard Bandler.